Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It's like the passage of time every year, like a robin shows up, you see spring's here, and then you get the letter in the mail, and you say, oh, summer's here. It's the letter you got from the Bexar County property appraisals telling you what the number they assigned to the value of your property for this year. And when many people received their letter this year, they saw how, you know, the prices went up again here in Bexar County, because this is a growing community and there's been a lot of demand for property. But now we're in a pandemic and people are scratching their heads and wondering, how does this work? How do we move forward? How do I protest this? Because I don't think this actually is a reflection of what I think my property is worth. We're talking about that situation today here, and you can call in and tell us what your situation is, how you want to deal with that. Number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're joined by Michael Mesquita. He's the chief appraiser for the Bexar County Appraisal District, and Albert Yodesti, the Bexar County Tax Assessor Collector. And welcome both of y'all to The Source.
Thank you. Hey, thank David. You for having me here today. I appreciate the opportunity.
And so let's get straight to the chase here. Michael Mesquita, what is happening with the pandemic and protesting your appraisal?
Well, currently, David, thanks again for having us on. I just want to say that we're really actively trying to get folks to do as much stuff as contactless as possible. So we have our appeal portal open on our website. If taxpayers are not comfortable or don't have access to that, you can e-file. You can simply mail in your protest. Currently, our office is still closed to the public, and so we have a drop box that we have put out in front of our building. It's open 8 to 5. And at the moment, what we're doing is working all of our protests online and doing callbacks right now. We've already cleared something approaching $15 billion in protested value.
Albert Yodesti with the Bexar County Tax Assessor Collector. It says on the appraisal, this is not a bill. When do I get the bill?
The bills will be coming out in October, and at the same time that we always send them out.
And so we're waiting to see what the county and all these other taxing governmental bodies will do, how they will set their rates.
Right. Well, the appraisal district first, they have to complete their appraisal process, you know, going through the appeals and what have you. And then every taxing entity that we collect for the 59 different taxing entities, they will give us their tax rate that they adopt. And at that point, we'll put the appraisal district's property values together with the taxing entity's tax rate, and then that's how we'll come up with the total taxes that are owed by the individual property owners.
When I go to the Bexar County Tax Office to change a license or deal with a license plate stuff, I'll pay all sorts of taxes. It's a pretty crowded place. But if you all shut down, you reopened, you revised, you've adapted with the COVID-19. What's it look like now?
Well, obviously we've never closed. We had our drive-through where we were seeing, 400 people a day. We continue to operate our commercial services here at the downtown area. We've had people working in all four of our locations. Our goal was to continue to provide the services to our citizens because, number one is that they wanted them. Number two is that they deserved them. So we have really taken great pains in order to continue to provide the services. We have opened our lobbies now, and so we've also reduced all our seating capacity by 43%. We require everybody that comes into the building to wear face coverings. Our employees are wearing face coverings. We have hand sanitation units. We have the social distancing, and so we're really, anybody that comes into this building can feel safe. Also, we put in plexiglass face shields throughout the entire building, so any citizen that comes in our building will never have to deal directly with our with our employees, and but they will be able to see them. Another thing that we do when people are walking into our building, we take their temperature. This is to protect them, this is to protect us, this is to protect all our citizens. So we really feel like we have a very good game plan in our office in order to protect our citizens.
All right, let's go to our voicemail. This is from Brady.
Hi, my name is Brady Alexander. I represent the Hot Wells Mission Reach Neighborhood Association. Many of our members' properties are located within the 100-year floodplain. How can your office justify large increases in valuations of properties that cannot be built on or existing structures expanded due to floodplain restrictions? Thank you.
Michael Amesquita, Chief Appraiser for Bexar County Appraisal District. Can you answer that?
Sure. You know, David, every year we go through the same discussion. When FEMA readjusts the 100-year floodplain, because it seems like it happens every other year, those lines get moved all the time. And so constantly, every year, year in and year out, we're looking at the data within those same neighborhoods. So we either have data to support those value increases or we don't. And I can tell you that we have zero interest in raising values without supporting underlying data. So I would simply say to that association or any other one that has any specific questions about value of property in the floodplain, there's still a value there. I don't know if we have the right value on it, but it's going to be based on market data, which is the actions of buyers and sellers in that market.
And if they feel like it's been overvalued, what should they do?
They definitely should protest. Let us, you know, when you protest, you want to click that button on the bottom that asks for all of our evidence so that they get all of our evidence in advance of our conversation, and then we'll be able to work through that. It's the same people they would be seeing on a daily basis if we didn't have this situation we're dealing with. In our office, we've taken a lot of the same protocols the county has, and in fact, we've been working very closely with the city of San Antonio's four-phased opening plan. The problem is we're not just doing transactions here. You know, when you want to come in and protest your property value, you expect to sit down and be shown data, share your data. There's a lot of very close contact, which are all things that I'm not sure we have prohibitions against, but they certainly are strongly recommended not to occur. And typically, I like to use this visual, if you will. In the old days, before we had COVID-19, and you went to your jury duty, they might seat 640 people in that room. Well, we see between 1,000 and 1,500 people a day through my office for 5 months. And so out of pure sheer trying to keep the public safe, we're doing it electronically, we're doing it telephonically, but the same data, the same results are going to be achieved. In fact, I think we're getting a higher settlement rate right now than we did even last year, and we had a 92% settlement rate last year.
Now, what is the deadline, Michael Amesquita, to file the protest?
Okay, so we have three mailings. We mailed the tax agent file. All those properties that have a tax agent associated with them were gone April 20th, so their deadline was May 20th. The vast majority of homeowners and business property owners in Bexar County would have gotten their notices May 29th. So June 29th will be their deadline. And then we're about to mail just business personal property accounts, about 25,000 of those. Those will be 30 days from the date of their notice. But for most homeowners, it's going to be June 29th.
Let me go to a caller, and the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Fran has called in. Fran, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I was wondering if there's a formula that's used to assess the value every year. It seems like every year my property just goes up the maximum amount, which is, I think, 10 or 11%. How do you come to that number every year?
And Michael Amesquita, do you have a formula?
Actually, it's promulgated by law. And Fran, that was a really good question. Normally what happens is if it's your residence homestead, your property value cannot go up by more than 10% from one year to the next. So if you happen to live in one of our areas that is transitioning from what was normally thought as affordable and going to less than affordable, some parts of Southtown, you know, they've seen big increases. Parts of the east side have seen big increases. If your value was $100,000 last year and it's $200,000 this year, maximal amount it can go up to is $110,000. And it'll go up 10% every year until it gets to your actual market value. That was passed by the state legislature, oh gosh, probably 15 years ago. And that's why you see that very consistent 10% in March. Your market value is still well above what you're paying taxes on.
Albert Uresti, Bexar County Tax Assessor Collector. Is there anything you want to add to that?
Well, I would want to encourage, all our citizens that feel that, perhaps their property values are in question on their part, that, they go ahead and appeal their protest their values if they can. And I do want to clarify one thing. One of the things that I know a lot of people believe that the tax office does, tax assessor's office, is that we set property values and we set tax rates. The tax assessor collector's office does not set property values. That is done by the appraisal district. We also do not set tax rates. That is done by the different taxing entities. What we do is bring both of those numbers together and then send out the bills, and what we do is collect the property taxes. That is the role of our office.
So let me ask you about collecting property taxes when we've seen this economic downturn or recession, people losing their jobs. If people have a big tax bill and they're in dire straits with their household economics, what can you do for them?
Well, let me first start by saying that the county and the city did send a letter to the governor asking them that they roll over the 2019 property values to the 2020 tax roll. I also spoke in favor of that and even presented it at the appraisal district. What we can do for our citizens is nothing new. It's something that we've been doing all along. Our mission here is to help keep families in their homes. Since the day I took office, that has been what we work at. We've never deviated from that. My staff will tell you that any homeowner or any business owner that is sincere and wanting to keep their property, we will work with them. And we have never, ever once turned away a property owner that wants to keep their home, that wants to keep their business. Yes, we're going to require a down payment. Yes, we're going to require them to enter into a payment agreement, but we will work with them. And following up with that also, I think it's important that citizens understand that Bexar County, under my administration, has the most property tax payment plans of any county in the entire state of Texas out of the 254 counties. We also have the only 10-month payment plan in the entire state of Texas, and I think in the country, although we have not confirmed that. We have the only 10-month payment plan for our senior citizens, our disabled citizens, and our disabled veterans. This allows our citizens to be able to budget their money in a manner that is helpful for them, especially for our seniors. We have a lot of citizens out there that are living on $400, $500, $600 a month. They're out there. Trust me, we see them every day. And I know Michael Mesquita sees them every day, but here in my office, we see those senior citizens. So that's why we designed this 10-month payment plan. I will also tell you, for those citizens that are 65 and over that are having a difficult time right now, that can't buy their medicine, that can't buy their food, I tell them, well, don't pay your property taxes. How can I tell them that? I tell them that because by state law, they're entitled to a tax deferral. So if you're over 65 or disabled, you can get a tax deferral. What that does is postpones your property taxes. It does not make them go away. You will have to pay them eventually, but it will help you go through this time. And you can still pay your property taxes, but it's at a much lower interest rate with no penalties.
And we're getting ready for a break, but I want to ask you very quickly, Albert Uresti, the city has a lot of money, $50 million. They're working to help people keep their homes. Are you connecting to that at all?
Well, not per se. I mean, that's kind of a program that they're running, just like the county's running their program. But what we do is we will work with the property owners on those that own their homes.
Okay. All right. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got a lot of full board of questions here about the Bexar County property appraisal system and the protesting and paying of taxes. Their number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. With the COVID-19 response, we know the economy is in a recession. People are having trouble paying their bills, and they have to figure out how to deal with these rising appraisals. You can protest. More information on that when we come back from the break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the property tax appraisal situation in the COVID-19 recession and how to pay those taxes. We're now joined by Ross Ramsey, executive editor of the Texas Tribune. Ross, welcome back to The Source. This is the first tax season where we're in the post-SB2 world reality of dealing with property taxes and those protests. What does that look like?
It's confused by the pandemic, as you know. Thanks again for having me back. The questions here are, around the legislation that passed last time. Is how much can a local government raise taxes without approval from its voters? The law says 3.5% unless there's a disaster. The law also says that a disaster includes pandemics and epidemic situations. There's some argument there, but the counties are looking and the cities are looking at how much can they raise their property tax revenues without triggering elections, and how much can they do that in a recession?
Cities, counties, school districts are all dealing with the money crunch right now. School districts are actually, some have argued, why is my school district charging me so much for taxes? They're not in school right now. Well, they're holding school. They're just doing it online. And actually, some of them are, it's costing them more to do that than if they did it on the property. All these entities are seeing big budget shakeups, and this impacts the way they look at their income.
Well, I think that's right. If you look at cities and counties for a moment, they're dependent to a great extent on sales tax revenues. If you have stores closed and you have a recession underway and people aren't buying as much, the sales taxes aren't bringing up as much, and their other source of income is property taxes. So that puts some pressure on property taxes in addition to putting budget pressure on them to cut their spending. School districts are a little bit different because their money comes from two sources mainly. The first is property taxes. The second is the state of Texas. And in the last legislative session, the state of Texas made a fairly explicit promise to take care of school districts if property revenues went down. School districts this time are, it's a complicated piece of formula, but they basically are compressing their tax rates. The idea was to push property tax rates down and also the local share of the total price, and the state would step in. But the state's biggest source of revenue is sales taxes, which, as I said, have gone through the floor.
But as local governments are looking at how do they provide extra services? They're putting money out into the world to try and keep people in their homes. We're dealing with protest that's draining budgets as well. And then they're seeing these revenue streams drying up. The price of oil is down. Sales tax revenue is down, although today new numbers are in and they look better, but they're still down. And now property values are down. This could almost be a perfect storm for that's going to put these local governments in a really bad spot.
Yeah, we had a recession in 2008, and the immediate response to that kind of saved the local and state governments was a huge infusion of federal stimulus money, if you remember all of that. And that helped in the immediate case. We don't have the same amount of money in play from the federal government that's directed to state and local governments, although there is some. And the one question here is how much is the federal cavalry or the financial cavalry, if you want to call it that, going to ride to the rescue, or are they on their own? If they're on their own, cities and counties in particular, the biggest part of their budgets is law enforcement and criminal justice. And, with the protests over George Floyd going on and the conversations about defunding or reforming the police going on, ordinarily in a budget crunch at a city level, the two departments that are in immediate trouble are libraries and parks. And usually they protect public safety. In this case, in this environment, it may be that public safety budgets, in particular police budgets, are part of the target list, you know, when city managers and mayors and city councils get to writing their next budgets.
Lots of calls for Governor Greg Abbott to freeze property taxes, keep them at the previous year's level for assessments. Why did he say no? That seems like it would be an easy play for him to say yes.
It's a little bit out of his lane. Property taxes, you know, the state government doesn't have a property tax. And what the government actually does and what the governor actually does is limited because, you know, if he actually did something to set property taxes, he would be violating the Constitution. So he basically said, leave it to the locals. There's two components to your property tax bill. The value of your property, which is getting set now. A lot of people have got, everybody's got those notices. A lot of people are protesting. And the second thing is when the government entities, the city council, the county commission, the school board, look at those property values and decide what rate to set. It's the property value times the rate that makes your bill. So Abbott's actually in a place where he can say, look, I didn't set your value. I didn't set your rate. Your argument is with your local officials.
Is SB 2 working the way that the drafters intended it to?
They're not sure yet. You know, this is really the first time we've had it on the ground. The basic idea is that tax revenue for any given government can't rise, property tax revenue can't rise more than 3.5% without voter approval. So if they want to raise it 4% or 5%, they have to ask the voters to do that. There's a clause in that that says, except in cases of emergency. And elsewhere in the tax code, emergencies definitions include epidemics and pandemics. And so there's an argument over whether the current situation describes an emergency, and if so, allows a local government to raise taxes more than 3.5% without asking voters about it. A lot of cities and their lawyers have said yes. The state attorney general says no. The governor says no. You know, like everything else these days, you know, that probably gets settled in court if it comes to it.
All right. Ross Ramsey, executive editor for the Texas Tribune. Thanks for calling in and giving us an update on how SB 2 is working, as many people are seeing they're dealing with the realities of their tax bills. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, David. Thank you.
All right. So now let's swing back over to Michael Amesquita, the chief appraiser for the Bexar County Appraisal District, and Albert Uresti, the Bexar County tax assessor collector. Michael, I saw on the county agenda today, Commissioner's Court, talk about maybe changing the name of the Bexar County Appraisal District. Is that right?
Yeah, we've kind of been talking about that. They finally engaged me in a conversation yesterday, and let me know this was the plan to put it on the agenda today. And I simply told them, you know, I really don't agree with it. That would make us the only appraisal district in the state of Texas that didn't have the name of the county in it. Ironically enough, part of SB 2 refers to highlighting some information for public information and referencing only the county in which the property is located in, not the appraisal district. That's the website we have to maintain for them. But at any rate, you know, my board of directors will consider whatever resolution the county commissioner's court passes, and they'll consider it.
And the name that's being proposed is the Texas Appraisal District?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to go over real well with the legislature, but we'll see.
And this came from the commissioner's court themselves. Kevin Wolf?
My actual conversation was not with Kevin, but with another member of the court.
All right. Well, that's something to watch. And so let's go back to the callers, and let's go to Aubriana. Aubriana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. How is it that a third party can file a protest on a taxpayer's behalf? I went online to file our protest, and we were told that one had already been filed. So I was real curious about that, how a third party could do that.
And Michael Amesquita?
Right. And so those third parties generally tend to be either attorneys or they tend to be property tax agents. And if you did not authorize them to do that, in Texas, this isn't the appraisal district's policy. This is actually state policy, and it's imperfect, but anybody can file a protest on your property and then solicit your business later. That happens quite often. Oftentimes, we have more than one tax agent showing up to a hearing historically. And then, you know, we basically give the hearing to the one who has the most current signature and fiduciary agreement. It seems convoluted, but that's something that the state of Texas allows to happen.
So it seemed like someone, even without your own knowing, like you're saying, can go in and appeal your property taxes, your appraisal, and then they would come back to you and ask you to compensate them?
Well, what they do is they, before they get into a hearing, they need to have a valid fiduciary, and we will make that happen. We will not let them into a hearing without a signed fiduciary agreement, which is their agreement to represent you for whatever your terms are. And so, you know, if a taxpayer feels like somebody has signed up to represent them and without their authority, all they need to do is call my office and let us know. We'll be happy to take care of that for you. If she wants to protest, I suggest she just go to protest@bcad.org. Let us know what happened. Make sure we have a good contact number for you, and we'll get that issue resolved for you.
The idea of a protest, Michael Emesquita, does sound like it's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of work. But with these reforms with SB2, has that been made a lot easier? Is it more of a turnkey way of dealing with things?
SB2 didn't really get into my appeal process that much. I think the process is pretty flawless. I'm not going to say flawless. It's going to be pretty expeditious for most taxpayers. As I say, last year we achieved a 92% settlement rate. The year before that was around 88%. This year we're tracking on the stuff that has been settled. We have currently about $80 billion under protest. We've cleared about $11 or $12 billion, and we're seeing about a 96% settlement rate on those that have been closed out. So, I mean, my staff is here to help. They have zero interest in anyone paying on a higher value than is required.
All right, we're taking another break. We'll get more callers on the air. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Well, right after this break, we'll get you on the air with your questions with Albert Uresti, the Bexar County Tax Assessor Collector, and Michael Emesquita, the Chief Appraiser for the Bexar County Appraisal District. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Bexar County property appraisals and your taxes. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Richard on the phones. And Richard, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, thank you. I was asking about what if I found out that the property that I paid for needs extensive repairs and I don't think that I should be charged so much in taxes because of that. Is that an option for me? I'll take my answer off there.
All right. So Michael Emesquita.
Yeah, that's a great question, Richard. And, you know, actually, the condition of the property is hugely important to the individual characteristics and what we can actually assess your property based on. In other words, if homes in your neighborhood are selling for $100,000, but your home has $10,000 or $15,000 worth of repairs that are needed, obviously it's not going to command the same $100,000 that like properties in your neighborhood would. If you don't have written estimates, and those are hard to come by these days, just a simple snapshot with your smartphone. You can email that stuff to us as we communicate over the either our email system or our online portal to protest. And we can do all that seamlessly and without any contact. We're just about finished getting our signature done electronically so that even when we sign up on these things over the phone, you can use your SMS card on your smartphone to simply sign your agreement.
Right. So Albert Uresti, Bexar County Tax Assessor Collector, before earlier in the program, you talked about how you really work with families to keep them in their homes. What about small businesses, local small businesses? Are you able to work with them in the same sort of manner?
Yes, we will work with whatever businesses is that we can. It doesn't matter how small they are, you know, how large they are. And our goal is to provide the best service possible to our homeowners and to our business owners. So, yeah, we continuously work with our business owners. We want our businesses to stay in business, and we want to help them be there. I mean, they're the foundation of our country. So anything we can do to help them, we want to make sure that we do.
If a business has not been able to operate for months because of COVID-19, does that play into what their property taxes are going to be?
No, it's not going to. It's not going to affect that. But what they need to do is they need to, if they feel that they should protest their property values, that's what they need to do. But we will take that into consideration when we're sitting down with them and trying to figure out how best that they can, how best they can pay it. Also, they need to file their rendition, which is their personal property. They can file that with the appraisal district as well. But the main thing about small businesses is that we want them to know that we're here to help. I know the county is offering several grants and loans to them as well, as is the city. So they need to try to get into that resource. I know they had done this originally, and so they're asking people that may not have been called to reapply. So that's something that they need to do. But again, we want to work with these businesses, you know, as much as we can, and we will do that.
But homestead exemptions and other protections that people have for their homes don't really apply for their small businesses, right?
That's correct. But since you mentioned that, one of the things that we have tried really, really hard to do and that we continue to do every day, we've trained our staff, and I can't tell you how it breaks my heart when I see homeowners, especially our senior citizens, that don't have all the exemptions that they're entitled to. We've had them come in here and, 20 years without the exemptions. You know, when people talk about how can I lower my property taxes, obviously one step is to, appeal your property values. And, of course, the other step is for the taxing entities to lower it. But the other thing where people can help themselves directly is to make sure that they have their exemptions, the most basic one being their home exemption. If you're 65 and over, that does two things. It allows you to get the 65 and over exemption, which is $65,000 off the city of San Antonio values. But the other thing, the more important thing, is that it gives you a tax freeze. And so with a tax freeze, if your property taxes are $2,000 a year, they're going to continue to be $2,000 a year till you pass away or sell your home. There is going to be some fluctuation because the hospital district and the River Authority do not participate in the tax freeze. But if you are a senior citizen, it's imperative that you go and try to take care of this. And also, if you're a disabled veteran, there is also things to help you in your quest. But again, taking care of your exemptions is one of the things that all citizens can do to help themselves in the immediate. And the other thing, too, that I'd like to just kind of expand on, we have companies out there that are going to our senior citizens and telling them, hey, we can get these home exemptions, we can save your money, and all these other things that they're telling them. Sometimes they're even going 4 years. They're getting years in advance. So I would warn our senior citizens that they can get those home exemptions on their own. They can go to the appraisal district, or they can come to my office, and we'll be glad to help them. We help people all the time, and then we forward their paperwork. But please, if somebody comes to your property, to your home, and says, hey, I can save you money, don't do it.
Because they want you to pay them to get those exemptions. Those exemptions are free for the asking. I got a quick email here from Randy. With all due respect to my experience and everyone else that I've known, the first line of appraisers that you meet when you protest your valuations is not very good. They're not well-versed in property values. If you need a real appraisal, one should get a private property appraiser that has experience in your neighborhood. Michael Amesquita, how well-versed are your appraisers?
All of our appraisers are certified registered professional appraisers, or they're on track to be. Appraisal districts across the state of Texas are 40 years old, so we've had some turnover, and we do have some younger staff. Those staff never meet with taxpayers, not on the phone, not in person. They'll have at least a two-year training period where they actually will shadow a senior appraiser and get well-versed in how to have conversations with property owners regarding their individual property values. Remember, David, we do a mass appraisal, so we look at a neighborhood. We don't look at each individual property, but the law requires that we consider the individual characteristics of every property. So when we get down to that opportunity to sit down and discuss, whether it's on the phone or in person or whatever the case may be, that's where we have a give and take of exchange of data and information and insight into that property where we can make appropriate adjustments. That's the time frame that we're in right now.
Let's go to Joan on the phones. Joan, thanks for calling into The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I just the other day started looking at the e-file process and all for my protest, and I discovered that everything is being done by electronically, or the final meeting, if you will, is by telephone. So there's no opportunity to have a face-to-face online meeting even. It's all done just audio. And I feel that that's an opportunity for misunderstanding, miscommunication. You can't make sure the other person's looking at the right document. You can't see their body language. I just think that it really skews things against the person wanting to make the protest.
So you want to have like visual Zoom calls, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel it's essential.
Okay. Michael Emesquita, is that something a person can request?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's why we ask folks, you know, we've done a lot of publication. There's information in the notice itself telling you how to go about asking for these things. And so what we want to do is make sure that the public lets us know how they want us to contact them. Even with our phone calls, we intend to schedule a date and time certain with about a 2-hour window that we will call you on, not knowing how long those things are going to take, because it's not as effective as a face-to-face. Face-to-face isn't really possible in this current situation. So we did, and we have acquired a WebEx license, and we're happy to send them an invite to handle their informal that way, as well as their formal. Now, as you said earlier, the Attorney General opined that earlier this year that in-person formal hearings are mandatory if a taxpayer requests it. And we've made modifications to our ARB panel rooms in order to help accommodate social distancing. My staff won't even be in there. They will actually be brought in by media or by telephone.
Okay, I'm going to go to Betty really quick. And Betty, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is in regards to obtaining an independent third-party residential real estate valuation with pictures and documentation and submitting it to BCAD. How much weight will BCAD in a formal and informal protest provide to that real estate appraisal?
All right. Thank you, Betty. Michael?
Well, we always look. I mean, that's where we get a lot of our information. You know, we don't have mandatory sales price disclosure in Texas. So the information that we get during this time of the year helps us build data for next year. And it also helps influence values for this year if the appraisal that you've ordered is as of January 1st or within a month of either side of that date. Not knowing what the purpose of the appraisal is huge. If it was done specifically for estate planning purposes, that may not be the market value of the property. As long as it was a market value appraisal, those are given heavy consideration because the law requires it. And so, then we look to see how closely the data in that appraisal comports with the data that we have.
So I want to emphasize something you went over very quickly. You said you don't, like appraisers, appraisal districts don't have access to the actual price that people pay for houses and property. And so how do you know what the thing is worth?
We send out about 27 to 30,000 questionnaires, that because we have that many transactions every year. And we get about 30 to 35% of those back with terms and conditions of sale. And then we look to aggregate data that SABOR publishes, that the Texas Real Estate Center at A&M publishes, as well as looking at individual information that taxpayers bring us. They send us appraisals. They send us purchase prices.
And so this is how you make sure that the appraisal is as close as you can get it, but then people can still protest. And the deadline really quickly is when to protest?
Generally for everybody, it's going to be June 29th.
All right. Michael Emesquita, the chief appraiser for Bexar County Appraisal District. Albert Yodesti, thank you so much for joining us, Bexar County Tax Assessor Collector. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia.
Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.